couple of minutes. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. Dennis Bernstein brings us Flashpoints at 10:15. On Between the Covers at 11, screenwriter and author Todd Davies, who created the Arcadia trilogy of fairy tales, visits KBOO to discuss mythology, technology, and cooking with what you have. And 11:30, Black Book Talk, visits with author Robert Greer to discuss the latest in his contemporary cowboy series, Astride a Pink Horse. And all of this unique and incredibly enlightening programming is because of the generosity of KBOO members. And if you're not one, join the team. Go to kboo.fm and click on donate. It's 8:59.
Coming to the radio airwaves on Monday, June 5th at 11 p.m. The Ubu Hour Radio Western. Kill faster, pussycat.
I don't care for the way you girls get your thrills. Enough is enough. Now give it back or I'll...
Ugh. Go, Tommy! Get her! Get her, Tommy! Hit her hard!
Adapted from Russ Meyer's 1965 cult film classic, Faster, Pussycat, Kill, Kill.
Did you see that? That was too easy.
Monday, June 5th.
They're murderers! She killed them with her bare hands!
Kill faster, pussycat! 11 p.m. on the Ubu Hour!
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
KBOO Portland, this is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program. Here on your people-supported radio station, KBOO. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I want to start with the latest news on the withdrawal, the anticipated withdrawal by Donald Trump from the Paris Climate Accords. According to The Guardian in the UK, it would go down as a hallmark of his presidency would be unilateral, reckless, and splashy. Trademark Trump. They write the president has said he will announce his decision at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That'll be noon here on the Pacific Coast. But while Trump, they write, has often stood on a range of issues as a maverick outlier from mainstream Republican politics on climate change, he is at the center of the party's orthodoxy. Trump's disbelief in climate change and imminent decision on whether to support the Paris Agreement reflects an area of unusual agreement between the president and elected Republicans whose track record of climate change denialism is plain and long. They write, unmissable behind the elected Republicans stand other interests, the oil, gas, and coal industries, which together are some of the most influential donors to Republican candidates. The big money supporters got a return on their investment last week when 22 Republican senators whose campaigns have collected more than $10 million in oil, gas, and coal money since 2012 sent a letter to the president urging him to withdraw from the Paris deal. Trump had been said to be on the fence about the deal. Members of his inner circle, including his daughter, are reported to favor staying in. And there's much more to that article in The Guardian, but they have a list of some politicians, quite a long list, for the past three election cycles of who's taken money from oil and gas. Just a few of those names would be James Inhofe of Oklahoma, who's taken $465,000. John Barrasco of Wyoming, who's taken $458,000. Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, who's taken 1,000,001. John Cornyn of Texas, who's taken 1,000,001. Roy Blunt of Missouri has taken $353,000. Roger Wicker of Mississippi, $198,000. Handsome sums, and the list goes on and on. Today I've decided to concentrate on the white terror that the nation is experiencing. The white terrorism. And I'm going to get down to that. And I'll tell you now the number to call in about the situation we are facing with white terrorists showing up on the 4th at Terry Schrunk Plaza. The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Of course, this takes place in the context of the murders allegedly by Jeremy Christian. I'm characterizing this as part of a white terror wave, and I want to explain why that is so, but I'll use as a base here an article from Al Jazeera, Qatari Media, and I'm not going to quote it quite exactly. I'm going to go back and forth from my recollections and opinion. As I read part of this article from Al Jazeera, they write, "A man accused of killing two other men during an anti-Muslim rant against two girls on board a train in the U.S. city of Portland appeared in court shouting slogans and defending his act as patriotism." This is just in case you haven't heard this story, if you've been under a rock in Portland. I need to set the ground here. Jeremy Christian, 35 years old, is charged with murder, attempted murder, possession of a weapon, and a hate crime after he stabbed the two men who tried stopping him from shouting slurs at a pair of teenage girls on Friday. And here again, I want to depart from the text and say that PM News Director Zealous Marchant is right in pointing out that when you hear that there are three victims, there are five. And of course, the victims are the girls who are confronted by the most violent and the most frightening aspect of white supremacy in the United States, of white terror, someone who is actually ready to kill them with a knife, and who in fact killed two other people and injured a third. Returning to the article, one of the girls was wearing a headscarf and is believed to be Muslim. Christian entered the courtroom on Tuesday shouting about free speech, Portland. He said, "Free speech or die, Portland. You've got no safe place," yada, yada. He also said, "You call it terrorism, I call it patriotism." Police say Christian has extensive associations with white supremacist and anti-immigrant hate groups, and that's the interesting part. And that's what I want to dial down on. I want information, and I'm looking to find what I can on the media, on the web. Just how extensive is white terror here in Portland? But I have more to say about that because there's a context of white terror, and I think we need to own up to it. When I say we, I mean all the people designated as white. Returning to the article, Christian is reported to have shouted Islamophobic slurs at the girls, as well as other hate speech. Many hail the two victims, Rick Best and Taliesin Namkhai-Meche, as heroes, and promoted crowdfunding pages to support their grieving families. A third victim, 21-year-old Micah David Cole Fletcher, who was also stabbed in the attack but survived, attended the court hearing. People also gathered at the transit station near where the men were killed to show support. That would be the MAX station out at the Hollywood MAX station, I believe it is, and 33rd near Halsey. Maybe it's more like 35th. And last I checked, there is quite the pile of flowers and candles out there. Skipping ahead in the article, U.S. President Donald Trump's harsh anti-Muslim rhetoric and anti-immigrant policies have energized hate groups and individuals harboring rage. In recent months, there have been a series of attacks, some fatal, on non-white immigrants in several U.S. states. U.S. civil rights group, they're talking about the Southern Poverty Law Center, has documented 867 such incidents merely in the 10 days following Trump's election as president last November. Quoting Steve Wasserstrom, a faculty of Reed College here in Portland, there's no question there's some connection between the so-called Trump ideology emanating from the White House and the kind of permission giving that leads through social media to these kinds of events, end quote. And they write, Trump, meanwhile, condemned the killings of the two men, calling them unacceptable. But Trump took quite a while to get around to that. Quite a while in terms of the news cycle. Something that he is very attuned to. They write, Christian's next court appearance is on June 7th. If found guilty, he could face either life imprisonment or the death penalty. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and I don't believe in the hate speech thing. I just want to say that's because I think that hate speech is a little poorly defined right now. People are talking about an amendment to the First Amendment, accepting hate speech. I don't think that's necessary. I think we just need to define what we're talking about. When we're talking about the alt-Reich, we're talking about Jeremy Christian's speech, we're talking about speech in the context of armed intimidation and death squads. That's what the Nazis are. That's what the Klan is. And that's what, generally speaking, white supremacy is. It's these are long-standing phenomena that are marked by murder. So I keep trying to point out that the Nazis, I'm using the little in there in a broad sense, use free speech to cover for knives and guns. When they gather, it's armed intimidation. The only speech is made by the fear they intend to spread. They will say anything. It's arbitrary, like when the murderer pretended to support Stein and Sanders, or maybe he was just dumb enough to support Stein and Sanders and not realize that they were foursquare against white supremacy. For a reductio of the pretense of the white supremacists, look at the militia that took over the wildlife refuge in the last year news cycle, and ask yourself if their armed free speech out there at the Malheur refuge would have been tolerated had they been black. They went there with guns, they held their guns, and were quite threatening with them, and don't you think they would have been shot to rags if they had been black? It's not just white supremacy we're talking about today. It's resurgence of white terrorism. And Ronald is on the air. Oh, okay. Ronald has hung up. You can call back in if you like, Ronald. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. KBOO PM News Director Zealous Marchant sent the news team a link to Imagine 2050's website this week. Here's part of what it says, quote, Act for America, the nation's largest anti-Muslim grassroots group, announced today that it is coordinating a series of protests across the nation on June 10th. The protests, branded March Against Sharia, will explicitly target Muslim communities, raising the specter of Islamic law as a fear-mongering tactic. And speaking for myself, although the Portland event has been canceled by the organizer, the other 22 cities targeted on June 10th will suffer rallies. So that is going forward, just not here in Portland. They write, the events are being organized by conservative activist and unapologetic Trump supporter Scott Pressler, who serves as Act for America's field operations coordinator. ACT's announcement of the event relies heavily on the group's Islamophobia, purporting to explain, quote, why Sharia is incompatible with Western democracy and the freedoms it affords, end quote. ACT for America's founder, Bridget Gabriel, regularly conflates all Muslims with terrorists, once saying that every practicing Muslim is a radical Muslim, and that Muslims are a natural threat to civilized people of the world, particularly Western society. Now, within my own experience of life, I find this particularly ridiculous since I was married to a Muslim for several years when I was young. And I don't know where to start saying how ridiculous that is. But of course, when they're talking about Sharia law, they're talking about their imaginary threat, this imaginary idea that Muslims in America wish to impose a theocracy here in the United States. It's not happening, won't happen, can't happen, and It's just a way of stirring up people out of fear and out of xenophobia and racism. So returning to the text, although the March Against Sharia events claim to support religious freedom, Gabriel has also claimed that a practicing Muslim who believes in the teachings of the Quran cannot be a loyal citizen to the United States of America. That's a quote. And the organized anti-Muslim movement, they write, has long sought to spread fear of Islam by arguing that Sharia law or Islamic law poses a threat to American law as a complete legal falsehood. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Now, I want to put this in context. This is the nation that still steadfastly refuses to deal with or expunge the phrase in its constitution designating black people as 3/5 of a human being. This is the nation that has a Second Amendment mentioning militias because the Second Amendment was created to keep black people down with armed militias, frankly. And this is a nation that has history of unrelieved aggression against people of color. And so this latest white terror, I would say, is quite dangerous, and I want to explain why. First, I want to turn to history. Greensboro, 1979. Greensboro, North Carolina, just as Ronald Reagan ran on a dog whistle white supremacist campaign. Oh, yes, he did. And I'm conscious these days, when I talk about Ronald Reagan, I'm talking to an audience for whom many, especially younger members, believe I'm talking about a great president. I'm not. Ronald Reagan was corrupt when he was not being a fool. The poor man suffered suffered dementia. And he had 110 indicted and convicted members of his administration by the time things were all said and done. And yes, he did run on a white supremacist campaign. But in 79, the Greensboro Massacre is the term for an event which took place on November 3rd of that year when members of the Communist Workers' Party and others demonstrated in a Death to the Klan march in Greensboro, North Carolina. CWP, they were Maoists, I'm quoting from the Wikipedia entry, which had advocated that Klan members should be physically beaten and chased out of town, engaged in confrontation with members of the Ku Klux Klan and the American Nazi Party. Four members of the Communist Workers' Party and one other individual were killed, and 10 other demonstrators were wounded. The CWP had supported workers' rights activism among mostly black textile industrial workers in the area. Two criminal trials of several Klan and ANP members were conducted. Six men were prosecuted in a state criminal trial in 1980. Five were charged with murder. All were acquitted by an all-white jury. Not surprising, that part, huh? A second federal criminal civil rights trial in 1984 concluded with the acquittal of 9 defendants by an all-white jury. Survivors filed a civil suit in 1980, led by the Christic Institute. The case in federal district court accused numerous police officers and 4 federal agents, as well as Klansmen and ANP members, of violating the civil rights of those killed, and it also charged the city with failure to protect the legal demonstration. The jury found that the Klan Nazi shooter is liable for the death of Dr. Michael Nathan, the only non-CWP victim. The jury also held the Greensboro Police Department responsible for failing to do more to prevent the shootings because it was told by an informant that the KKK planned violence. These groups were ordered to pay a total of $350,000 in damages. This is one of the few times in U.S. history when a jury held local police liable for cooperating with the Ku Klux Klan in wrongful death. In November 2004, marking the 25th anniversary of the killings, about 700 people marched through Greensboro to City Hall on the original route. And skipping ahead, the Greensboro Truth and Reconciliation Commission was created, but it didn't get the charter that it needed for subpoena powers. CWP march organizers had filed their plans for the march with the police and gained permission to hold it. Police generally covered such formal events in order to prevent outbreaks of violence, but few officers were present during this march. We're talking about 1979, the Greensboro Massacre entry from Wikipedia. A police photographer and a detective followed the Klan and neo-Nazi caravan to the site, but they did not attempt to intervene in events. And, of course, those events were shooting the commies dead. Edward Dawson, a Klansman turned police informant, was riding in the lead car of the caravan. He had been an FBI informant beginning in 1969 as part of the agency's COINTELPRO program and was among the founders of the North Carolina Knights of the Ku Klux Klan when the North Carolina chapter of the United Klans of America split. By 79, he was working as an informant for the Greensboro Police Department. He was given a copy of the march route from the police and informed them of the potential for violence. Absent the police, the attackers escaped with relative ease. Bernard Bukovich, an undercover agent for the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, had infiltrated a unit of the American Nazi Party during this period. This group had been formed by Frank Collin, who'd been ousted from the National Socialist White People's Party. The ANP members joined with a KKK chapter to disrupt the November 1979 protest march. At the 1980 criminal trial, the neo-Nazis claimed that Bukovich encouraged them to carry firearms to the demonstration. At the 85 civil trial, Bukovich testified that he was aware that Klansmen and the ANP intended to confront the demonstrators. He did not tell police or other law enforcement. Now, I'm telling you this because, as I was saying, we're facing demonstrations and counter-demonstrations that will include actual Nazi Party members, but which, generally speaking, are taking place in the white terror that has been generated by Donald Trump's demagogic and racist campaign for president. And I want to say that I have some more information here, and it's rather upsetting. And it's going to affect people differently depending on who you are. If you are transgender like me, it's going to affect you a certain way. If you're a person of color, it's going to affect you a certain way. If you are white, cisgender, well off, it's going to affect you a certain way. And it's that last way that needs to be confronted. I am concerned when I hear people say that this rally needs to be ignored. The rally by the little in Nazis at Terry Schrunk Plaza on Sunday in downtown Portland. It should not be ignored. The permit should not have been issued simply because of the danger of, because this rally is not actually an act of free speech. Free speech takes place outside the bounds of armed intimidation. If I come into your house and pull a gun on you and ask who you voted for president and tell you who I think you should vote for president, that is an act of armed intimidation. When white people get together as white people under white terror, white intimidation, in the context of all of the murders that have taken place by police departments infiltrated by white supremacists, by police departments who will not turn in their own members who act in a murderous way towards people of color. When white people want to get together and celebrate their whiteness, which is a false status, including several races under a false banner of paleness. And I say that realizing that the whole idea of race is false. It's not free speech because the Nazis really did kill millions of people, because the Klan really has extended American slavery by killing and intimidating people of color, and gay people and trans people and bicurious people and anyone who doesn't match their idea of supremacy, of white, male, cisgender, straight supremacy. A pitiful idea, and yet one which has quite a bit of power right now, as I wish to demonstrate. I want to quote an article from Bill Moreland. By the way, that number, if you want to call in with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. This is from 2015. Five white supremacist gang members in Portland, Oregon, are accused of kidnapping and torturing two men they suspected of cooperating with authorities in Operation White Christmas, a major investigation. They're talking about an FBI investigation that subsequently led to more than 70 arrests in Oregon. The massive investigation, Moreland wrote in SBLCenter.org, resulting in charges including murder, attempted murder, assault, kidnapping, drug possession, and identity theft, is a case study in the relationship between white supremacists and outlaw motorcycle gang members on the streets and in prisons. Authorities say that criminal enterprises identified in the investigation include the Gypsy Jokers outlaw motorcycle gang and five street and prison white supremacist gangs, the Rude Crude Brood, the European Kindred, or EK, the All on a Bitch, Fat Bitch Killers, and Insane. I can't even say some of these names, and I apologize for using the B word there. Criminal charges against 70 defendants have been killed in, criminal charges against 70 defendants have been filed in state and federal courts. There's a quote saying, quote from Multnomah County Sheriff's Detective Joshua Schwick, saying, "We've also seized over 100 guns as part of the investigation. Armed intimidation is what I'm talking about. Pardon me, I was up all night, and we'll just see if my tongue makes it through this broadcast. The time is 9:25. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I invite your calls, 503-231-8187. I'm now talking about just how much white supremacist direct violent activity is in town. Continuing with that article, in the first incident, David Ray Bartle and David Bruce Corbett are accused of kidnapping a man at gunpoint from his Gresham, Oregon home on December 21st, 2012, taking him to Tom's Auto Painting and Body Shop in Southeast Portland. There, the attackers stripped the victim, struck him with bats, and used a belt sander on his left upper arm. The attackers then are accused of putting a helmet on the victim's head and firing a silencer-equipped rifle, striking the man's head four or five times. They then injected the victim with heroin and dumped the unconscious man in the street about half a mile away. And there's another incident, shooting a man in a spray booth in the auto shop, which will come up in just a moment. Now skipping ahead, with the next article, this is from KOIN 6 News. From 2015, a 44-year-old man was arraigned on allegations he intentionally tried to kill a man by maiming and torture. This is against David Ray Bartle again, alleging that he tried to cause the death of Nicholas Remington. And he was a member of the street and prison gang, the Rude Crude Brood. Remington, according to court documents, was taken to an auto body shop in the 8400 block of Southeast Powell Boulevard by Bartle, where he was secretly confined for the purpose of terrorizing. Here again, we're talking about the splatter room, the spray room at that auto body shop. Court records show the auto body shop is the location, this is a quote, where Brood gang members work, hang out, and conduct drug transactions. Court documents show that Remington was stripped, tortured with a grinder, beaten with a baseball bat, injected with methamphetamine and heroin inside the shop. And there's much more to the article describing this sort of violence, homicidal violence. And let me skip ahead to a more recent article. This from 2016, a former member of the gang Rude Crude Brood told a Portland jury that fellow gang members kidnapped and tortured him. This man survived. This is the same incident we're talking about here. And I'm talking about Tom's, I believe it's called Tom's Auto Body. It is at the 8400 block of Southeast Powell Boulevard. It is open today. That's the shocking thing. So ask yourself, in this society where if you are a black male and you so much as fail to pay a fare on the bus, you're subject to violence. If you're a black female and you try to drive away from police, you're shot to death. If you can be shot just for walking down the street, why is this auto body shop still open? If nothing else, there is the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act. I doubt that even that would be necessary to shut down that organization. But Tom's Auto Body is still open. And you can look it up on the web and You can find out all you need to find out about it. They'd like your business. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, and Pam's on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
As usual, timely, I have a question and I have a comment. The question is, what about the Nazis on our police force? How do we find out, you know, how many there are and who they are and that kind of thing? Because we don't, right now, we do know about one. And my comment is, every time I hear somebody like Trump say, oh, they are going to do this or that to us, it seems to me it's something that he wants to do, or, in other words, the other they, the, you know, the people that say that want to do to us, and in fact are doing in the case of Trump. So that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. How to find out where the Nazis are in the police force? I would say that's beyond my ken at the moment, although I would like to find out that as well. We know that they're there. We know that from various incidents related in the press that the Portland police have been directly involved in incidents of racist intimidation. How extensive is it? That's hard to say because of the code of silence on the police force. And I would like to criticize that most directly. The code of silence is part of the white code of silence more generally. And I want to talk about that. White code of silence, I would expect someone at any moment now to call up and start some version of not all police. What about the good policemen? The white code of silence tries to say that Jeremy Christian, who screamed his most direct racial hatred, is somehow